we're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The Creative Entrepreneur, making and selling physical goods. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business.
Hey friends, and welcome back to Proof to Product. My name is Katie Hunt. Genesis Duncan of Graphic Anthology is back on Proof to Product today. She was previously on episode 138, where we talked about her startup story and shifting her mindset around her business being a hobby versus an actual company, which of course it is. Genesis is a Portland, Oregon-based designer and illustrator where she runs a manufacturing business and has a retail storefront. She's also a PaperCamp alum and a Labs member, and she recently came back to share her experiences as a PaperCamp speaker. Genesis's work is a bilingual mashup of color, whimsical illustrations, and kind sentiments in both English and Spanish. In 2010, she founded Graphic Anthology, a stationery gift company that produces greeting cards and paper-related products in her signature illustrative style. She has worked with companies like Urban Outfitters, TJ Maxx, Serena & Lily, and West Elm, as well as hundreds of boutique retailers across the globe. And you can find her work at graphicanthology.com. On today's episode, Genesis tells us how and why she opened a brick and mortar shop. We talked about whether or not she's planning to exhibit or attend trade shows as a buyer in 2022. And she shares an important story that all of you need to hear about zip code protection on FAIR and why it may be something that you want to turn off in your shop. Before we dive in, I wanted to let you know that we recently put together a resource library that houses all of my free content in one place. This includes my delegating masterclass, my class about how to know if wholesale is right for you, my booth blueprint class, several workbooks that I've created, plus podcast roundups and more. And we have organized things based on your phase of business. So if you're starting, streamlining, or scaling, there is plenty here for you. We've got content in each of those categories. So to get access to this rich resource library, head to prooftoproduct.com/resources. Now let's hear from Genesis Duncan of Graphic Anthology. Genesis, welcome back to Proof to Product.
Thanks, Katie, for having me again.
It's my pleasure. You know, the last time you were on the show was way back in 2019, and a lot has happened since then within your business. So give us an update.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Way back in 2019.
Honestly, it feels like a lifetime ago,
right?
Because
it
of
does.
The pandemic and everything else.
It does. Like so many things have changed. Well, I think the last time I was on the podcast, we had talked about me making the shift at like this maker to business owner mindset. And I feel like, you know, that was such a huge thing for me. And
yeah,
it really did kind of prepare me for everything. The pandemic, you know, I panicked like everybody else, thought, you know, my business is going to go under, but instead it doubled. And I, you know, I had some retail that kind of offset the wholesale losses. And that kind of led to, you know, me looking for a new studio space, and which led to me opening a store. So lots of big changes happened.
That is huge that you opened the store in the midst of the pandemic. And so was it truly that you were looking for a new space for you to have your studio in, and you wanted, did you intend to find a dual use space, or was it just kind of a happy accident?
No, I mean, and I don't even know if I will say a happy accident. That is still, I like to be totally honest. You know, I
think yeah.
Having retail is not for everybody. It's a whole other job. But what had happened was I'm a homebody. And so I had been working out of my house and basically taking over every surface. And I got to this point where I'm like, this is ridiculous. I need to hire somebody to help me out instead of hiring the neighbors and, you know, random people from Facebook and my husband. And so I was like, okay, I need an actual employee, which means I don't want anybody coming to my house. And my husband was also like, get your stuff out of the house. So I started looking for a space, and I just wanted a studio space, and found this little kind of perfect space for me about a 5-6 minute drive from my house. And it was on a strip with lots of restaurants and bars. And I thought, well, this will be great, 'cause I can pop in, pop out. But when I went to look at the space, the landlord was like, what are you planning to do for retail? And I was like, well, what do you mean? What am I planning to do? I'm not planning to retail at all. He's like, well, I want, it's kind of like my space is kind of like in a mercantile. Mm-hmm. So he was like, well, I want the space activated. I just don't want it to sit empty because we have other makers and other spaces and other little shops. And it's on a tourist walkable strip. So I was thinking, okay, is this going to be a deal breaker? I really wanted the space. And I thought, well, you know, I could have it kind of like our little HQ shop and just have my cards and just keep it simple. So I agreed to do it and ended up with keys to this new studio space. And it had this nice little space that I knew would be perfect for a little shop. And so, yeah, I think we signed the lease the end of December and I opened the store at the beginning of February.
February 2021.
Yep. This year. Yeah.
That's amazing. So tell me, what percent of your products in your store are made by you? Because you talked about it possibly being your HQ and just your products. And what percent are from outside vendors?
Yeah. So I think right now the mix is probably, I don't know, 40, 60 split. So 40% mine and 60% other vendors. What kind of happened was I thought, oh, it's just going to be my stuff. And then I, you know, put my stuff out and I was like, the lovely thing about stationery is it's, you know, very small and lightweight. But when you're trying to merchandise a store, you're like, ooh, this is a problem. There's nothing in here.
I need more.
Right. And it looked really sad. And I thought, okay, well, people buy greeting cards, which is the bulk of my business, right? So people buy greeting cards for occasions, for birthdays, for holidays, housewarmings, that kind of thing. And I knew, because wholesale is the main focus of my business, I knew that the store didn't have to be super profitable right away. Like I could play, I could figure things out. So I thought, well, even though it's the pandemic, let me get a few gifts in here. And so I mm-hmm. started reaching out to people I knew who were other makers and bringing in like candles and little jewelry items. And so it kind of just, I feel like everything in my life, it just kind of snowballed. I didn't plan on this.
Strategically snowballed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where it was like, at first it was like, I'll get three or four different brands. And then it became like 12 brands. And then now, you know, I'm going to trade shows and shopping. And I feel like it's a really good, those gifts is such a good compliment to the cards, you know? And I think mm-hmm. that it makes, you know, like I try and think of my store as like kind of part of my branding. Like when people come into my store, they're getting a feel for my brand. And so I feel like yeah. those gifts complement it. It's this full like circle thing. It's like, oh, it's happy and it's fun. I can get a card, but also a gift and it's a one-stop shop and I'm done. So yeah, it's kind of shifted a little more to products by other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and too, you can bring in a wider range of products that you don't have to necessarily manufacture. And different price points too, right? So you can have gifts at higher price points and all yeah. everything in between.
Yeah. And for me, I knew the focus was going to be at least starting out initially. I was going to be the only greeting card vendor. You know, I was yeah. going to be the only one. And then I slowly changed that. And I've started adding other greeting cards by folks who have their own unique story to tell that I feel like is not my story to tell. Like, you know, one of the brands I brought in was Ash and Chess. Because that's, mm-hmm. you know, they have a very strong point of view and they're telling their story. And I love that. And so like, that's been a line that I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to bring in their cards. And I have one other card vendor, but the rest is just gifts, you know, and the focus is really, it is on my cards. You walk in, there's a big old graphic anthology sign and then my card wall and it's all my cards.
Nice.
Yeah. And then just, you know, bringing in those other brands that are a compliment.
That's awesome. You know, you were recently a speaker at our Paper Camp program, and you came back to answer questions the week we talked about trade shows, and you shared your experiences as both an exhibitor, because you've done a lot of different shows as an exhibitor, and you've also now attended shows as a buyer for your store. So for 2022, will you be exhibiting at any shows on the manufacturer side of your business? And if so, which ones?
You know, I'm still not sure about that. I'm kind of delaying to make those decisions, but I'm very interested in doing Noted again, just because it's on the West Coast, it's close to home, and they're going to be relaunching the gift show down there. So it's going to be,
yeah.
you know, in conjunction. So that's very appealing to me. But I think so far, that's the only one that I'm seriously considering for 2022. I just have a lot going on, and I don't know that that's, you know, with fair and with the reps I work with, I don't know that I necessarily am ready to go back or I need to go back.
Yeah, that's definitely something a lot of my clients have been weighing for themselves of like, where do I invest my time, my money, my energy, all of these things to get the maximum ROI. And that's something we've done for years, right? Like it's something we all have to do year over year. But I feel like COVID has definitely added new elements to that consideration and those decisions that we're making. Are you going to attend any shows as a buyer? And do you have your eye on any shows there?
Yeah, so that's more likely. And so what my thought is that I'm going to attend as a buyer, but doing research as an exhibitor. So I've never been to Atlanta. So, and I hear pretty good things about that, especially for the winter show. So I'm thinking that I'm going to attend there as a buyer and also be doing my reconnaissance, you know, for future exhibiting opportunities. I probably will also go back to Las Vegas. Because as a buyer, because it's just so close to me, it's easy in like 2-3 days. Yeah. So those are the ones that I think I'm probably going to go shop at as a buyer this year or as next year.
I know. What year are we in? I want to talk a little bit more about FAIR with you specifically, because I want to get your take as both a vendor that sells through FAIR and then a buyer who purchases from FAIR. You know, after our paper camp call, you, Rachel, and I were kind of just having a side chat. All the students had signed off and everything. And you told me something fascinating about FAIR's zip code protection that I wasn't aware of. So can you share with our audience, like, how is zip code protection somewhat problematic for buyers?
Okay. So, well, basically on FAIR, when you buy from a brand, they lock that zip code. They protect that zip code for 90 days. So in theory, you know, it's a great idea for me as a vendor, simply because I'm like, well, I don't have to think about it. You know, FAIR is kind of managing who is seeing my brand and who can buy for a short amount of time. But as a buyer, one of the challenges that I've encountered is that if you're not right on that 90-day mark reordering, somebody, another store in your zip code can swoop in and buy the brand, and then you are locked out through FAIR. Yeah. So I had this happen to me. So we opened in February and I picked up a hair accessory line, and it's been a strong seller for us. And I knew that. So like in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, I got to place this order 90 days to keep zip code protection. But at the same time, I thought, you know, there's so many brands on FAIR. Who's going to swoop in and take this hair accessory company for me? So I went to place my reorder. This had been my third reorder with them. And I was locked out, and I thought, what is happening? It's like day 93. Like, how is this possible? And no, another retailer down the street had been eyeing this brand. And I know that it happens because, you know, I will follow a brand that I can't get, but I'm interested in getting if it opens up. And so I suspect that, you know, they got an email when I passed my 90 day mark and they were like, hey, it's available.
But this presents so many issues to stores. I mean, at this point, you'd reordered 3 times. You were looking to do another order. What did you do in that instance? Did you contact them directly? Did you just wait for their 90 days to expire and hopefully jump back in? What was your process?
Yeah. Well, first, you know, I panicked because like, it's not, you know, in the grand scheme, it's not a big deal, but I'm like, this has been a good seller for us. And I'm on a busy strip with lots of shops. So there's also that whole, like, I don't want to step on toes. I don't know. I'm kind of the new kid on the block. I had all these things, but then I thought, you know what? No, it's just a hair. They're the hair breads. Like, this is not a big thing. So I ended up reaching out to the store or to the company directly. And I said, hey, this is what happened. I placed a few orders from you and this is a good seller for us. I would like to continue this relationship, but also I understand, you know, if I can't, but obviously I'll be disappointed. And one of the co-owners got back to me and they were like, this is so frustrating. We've been talking to FAIR about this. We don't want to lock out existing stores. And so luckily in their case, they were like, well, just go on the website and tell us what you want and we'll fill an order that way. And so for me, it was a little stressful because, you know, I guess in that case, it's nice that I reached out to the store and let them, or to the brand and let them know, but it was also very frustrating because now I'm like, well, I have this whole relationship with you through FAIR where I get terms and all these things. And now I'm having to do this whole separate kind of ordering thing. And so in the future, what does that mean? Where do I order from you? Do I just order direct?
Yeah. So it definitely makes for a clunky experience.
It makes for a clunky experience. And yeah, it was one of those, like, a wake up call for me as from kind of going back to the vendor end where I'm selling to other stores, is like, I know about Fair's retailer, zip code protection, but I guess I never thought about what that actually looks like in actuality.
When you told me this story, I was blown away because I immediately went to, okay, there are so many manufacturers that send follow-up emails that like do their marketing and that like are really trying hard to build strong relationships with the stores they sell to. And yet the Fair algorithm and the zip code protection are preventing some stores from reordering. And the brands, the manufacturers may have no idea about this. They may have no idea that they're losing out on sales, that they have a store that wants to place an order from them, but cannot technically because of the technology. And to your point too, that we discussed, it's not a good customer experience if a customer wants to get your product and they can't get it. And so when you were telling me this story, I kept thinking, oh my gosh, there's so much money being left on the table and there's so much, like this could be hurting relationships between stores and manufacturers. This could be causing manufacturers to lose out on sales that they don't even realize they're missing. And so did you then go in and turn off zip code protection for your shop on Fair, your Fair store?
So I have kind of an interesting thing. So I do have it turned off and I just have certain zip codes and territories blocked for other
for your reps.
For reps and also for particularly big accounts that I protect because they order volume. But overall, it's a very few, like a small percentage of zip codes that I need to even do that for. And so, yeah, I think it's one of those things where it just was, I mean, I ran into this problem with Fair from the like manufacturer end a while ago. Mm-hmm. And that's what prompted me to kind of shut things off. So I had them shut off for a while, but it's a default setting. So it's like one of those things where you have to go in and you have to request that it gets turned off.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, a lot of manufacturers, I would guess, probably, you know, you get on board on Fair, there's a lot of stuff to do. You're excited. You're getting these orders. You're not thinking about like how this is going to play out and who's benefiting from all these things. And don't get me wrong. I love Fair. I think it's been really great, but yeah, it's not necessarily built with your benefit in mind. It's a company. They're there to make money. Right. And so,
yeah,
while in theory, I like the zip code protection, in practice, it's a little murky. And I do think like, you know, like I was mentioning to you before, it's kind of like if it had been a brand that was just an okay seller or something I thought might be interesting to have in my shop, but not necessarily one of my strong sellers, I don't know that I would have reached out at all. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's other brands that I want to bring into my store and that, you know, zip code protection thing comes up and I'm like, okay, never mind. I won't. And I'm not even getting to the point where I'm having the conversation with the brand. Like, hey, I'm also in this zip code, but we're two different walkable, you know, shoppable neighborhoods. We are curating to a completely different audience, you know, because I think like that's one of the ways as a manufacturer, I can provide excellent customer service is I can say, hey, how do I help you build a unique selection that is not stepping on the toes of this other retailer? Or I know maybe of who carries the stuff around here and where there's shoppable neighborhoods and where there's not, you know, so, and a zip code could have many of those, you know, it's like, it's very challenging. So I'm pretty sure, yeah, money is being left on the table and brands are losing out. And so are stores, you know, because it's coming down to this algorithm. That's like this one zip code that isn't really a real world example of how we shop and how we buy and all kinds of stuff. So, yeah.
You know, I appreciate your take on this and I appreciate you sharing your perspective from both sides of the table. I think Fair has been an excellent tool for our community at large, especially during the pandemic. It's given a lot of people a lot of different opportunities to sell their products in ways that they may not have otherwise been able to do so. But we need to remember, too, that Fair is a tool and that we need to leverage it in ways that are going to benefit our business. But we also need to have our eyes wide open about maybe some of these default settings that aren't serving us. So one thing that kept coming through my mind, and I started to talk about it earlier but wasn't really as eloquent, is when reorders don't come through very quickly, manufacturers, and I felt this too when I had my brand, we tend to think the worst. We worry if our product sold through. We worry whether or not the stores liked it, whether their customers like this. But the fact is, we don't know what's happening in a buyer's world, what prevents them from reordering. And most of the time, delays and reorders have nothing to do with us, right? Like, you get busy, you're trying new products, maybe you have personal things going on that are holding up you from placing a reorder. But now we can add to this list too that, you know, the technology is preventing some people from reordering. And to what you said earlier, if it's a brand you feel very strongly about having in your store, you'll find a workaround and you'll go through that clunky experience to make it work. But you're not always going to do that. And I would think that a lot of buyers aren't going to do that extra outreach that you did, because it's not as simple. It's not as easy. So I appreciate you for coming on and sharing the story and also highlighting both the pros and cons of it, because I think it's important for everyone on both the buyer side and the manufacturer side to understand some of these nuances of these tools we're using and how we can best leverage them. And I do think anyone listening, if you're on FAIR, you may want to rethink the zip code protection, having that turned on. It is something that you have to ask them to turn off. But Genesis, thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. Has FAIR been a good platform for you on the manufacturing side, though? Have you had a lot of good sales?
Yeah, it's been excellent. I mean, for me, I onboarded to FAIR, I think in 2017, 2018, so a while ago. And I was kind of at this place where I was starting to do trade shows and I really wanted to work with reps, and I was having a hard time finding reps. And it kind of came in at the right time. And I think I was on FAIR before it got really, I mean, I feel like it feels a lot really saturated now. So I think the timing was great. But it's been a huge game changer for me as far as growing my business. And it's funny because, you know, when you start out, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners in the stationery industry can relate to this, you know, you're emailing everybody, you're like, I think my product would be a great fit for your shop, and you're hearing nothing. And FAIR has been one of those things where it's allowed those brands who I was part of the noise before, right? But they were, you know, they go on FAIR, they're looking for something specific. And so in that way, I feel like it's been easier for me to be noticed than, say, going to a trade show or, you know, emailing directly to stores. So that's been great, because I've picked up a lot of like those wish list dream stores that I thought I would be a good fit in, but that, you know, I was emailing and being like, huh, they don't want my stuff when I didn't hear back. So, I mean, in that way, FAIR has been great, just exposing people to my line for sure.
That's awesome. How has your mindset shifted now that you're on the buying side too? Because you did do outreach for so long and you wouldn't hear back from some people. And I know that takes a hit on our mindset and our ego a little bit. Yeah. Like, has your perspective on any of that changed now that you're also on the buyer side?
Oh my gosh. So when I first opened the store, I was thinking, oh, I wonder how long it's going to take to get emails, you know, from people who are like, crazy, right? And, you know, they came in, and in the beginning, I made a point. I was like, I'm going to respond to all these emails and just basically give them feedback, because I know what it's like if you don't hear anything. And sadly, I'm like, I'm so busy now. I'm just like, there's very few people I respond to. So I get it. And I could say any encouragement is like those emails, you know, people are seeing those emails, but in the people's inboxes are full. And in all the things, all the fires that have to be put out, all the just normal to-do list things, me trying to sit down and make craft a thoughtful response, it goes by the wayside. And it's not that I don't want to. It's not that I don't want to. I'm not interested in, you know, somebody's line. It's just, I don't have the time. But I do make a mental note of I usually do click on, I will look at pictures. I will look at a catalog. I will go to somebody's FAIR link. I just might not respond. And so for me, it has given me this interesting perspective. I'm like, okay, so how many of those people who did buy on FAIR eventually, maybe they did see my work and something sparked, some interest, but life just got in the way. And it took maybe me coming up on a platform like FAIR to see that. And also, I think, you know, through something like FAIR, it's made my brand a lot more searchable by things that I'm strong at, or that things that people, you know, as people are looking to diversify their vendor profiles and have, you know, makers of color and women and that kind of stuff and made in America brands. Something like FAIR is really great for retailers to hone down on that and be like, I'm looking for a Black woman owned business that is made in the USA. Boom. Or I'm looking for a woman owned greeting card company that does cards in Spanish. It's like, you can filter down. Whereas if I go to a trade show, you know, nobody knows if I'm the actual owner or, you know, it's kind of, so in that way, I think the fair has been great for that. And I can see how there is that benefit from being a buyer, right? Because that's how I shop. That's how I search for the store. I'm like, our focus is on woman owned companies. And so it's nice. I can search by that. I can search, you know, I want stuff that's made in the USA because, you know, now there's supply chain issues. So I don't really want to wait for something to come over on a container.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, it has changed the way I think about things from the whole wholesale perspective. And also, you know, when people reach out to me, I'm also thinking about like, okay, I'm seeing their work now and they have no idea what I'm thinking about it, but you know, I might place an order in a month, in a year, but you're planting that seed.
I love that you shared this because, you know, one of the things we talk about at Paper Camp a lot is the multiple touch points in our marketing outreach, right? Like we've got that initial phase where we are reaching out to people and introducing our line. We've got the ongoing wholesale emails that I want people sending at least once a month. I don't want you saturating people's, I don't want you, you know, flooding people's inboxes, but at least once a month, you're going to see that. You're going to open it. You may not respond. You may not place an order right then, but it's that multiple touch points is keeping people fresh in your mind, right? And two, then you layer in social and maybe a postcard mailer or some sort of direct mail piece here and there. And I think that we never know what's going to be that one thing that pushes the buyer into action, whether it's a new product, whether it's just another touch point, whether it's a, you know, market that's happening with discounts or whatever it is. So I think the fact that you shared that you do see stuff, you do open it, you may not respond and you may not buy right away, but you are seeing this and they're staying on your radar. I think that's really empowering. And I know that's hard to hear from a manufacturer's side. I've been there, you've been there, Genesis. Like we want some sort of acknowledgement to the effort we're putting out, but it's important for people to hear that buyers are just busy and their lack of acknowledgement oftentimes, most of the time, doesn't have anything to do with us or our product or our brand at all.
Yeah. And that's, I think, one of the very refreshing things about getting a glimpse, you know, behind the curtain about how store buyers, and I mean, like I was saying before, my store is small. You know, if I had multiple stores or my store were huge and I had, you know, a huge staff and was doing tons of revenue, it would be so much worse. And I'm overwhelmed, you know, and I have four people working for me and I'm still like, I can't, you know, like I want to look at this. I want to respond because I know, I remember, I mean, I don't really reach out.
You're still in it.
But I'm still in it, you know, and I'm like, I know how that I know that email probably took you a really long time to draft because you were making sure you hit the right tone and you wanted to acknowledge like something about their store. So you did your research, but yeah, it's just, it's one of those things where, you know, your email is coming in between bills, notifications I have to pay, in between everybody else trying to, you know, get me to pick up their line and, you know, my vet appointment reminders and, you know, like my grocery delivery. It's like, there's so much going on and it's just, it's all the work. It's all the personal. And like you said, you know, you don't know what's going on. You don't know what's going to prevent somebody from responding. And I think we, as a society, with culture, really have this whole thing. We get so fixated on, oh, you know, it must be me. Right. And it's like, it's very human to think about ourselves all the time, but it's like, yeah, we're like, what did I say wrong? What did I pick the right pictures? Did you know? It's like, no, it probably has nothing to do with you at all. It's that's a very refreshing point too. It's like, oh, okay. You know what? Like it might, you know what? It might never happen. That's okay. It probably isn't a good fit. It might happen, but it might be a year. It might not be on my timeline. So I think, there is something important in like, do your best, put your best foot forward, but it's going to take time. It's going to take time. And I feel like every marketing thing you hear is like what you have to, people have to interact with your brand. Like, what is it, like 7 or 8 times or something like that? And maybe it's even more now.
It's more now. Somebody was on the podcast recently and they said like 32 and my mouth dropped open. I'm like, 32 is a lot. But then I was thinking about it, and this was years ago. I shared this on Instagram recently. Like I had a buyer come by my trade show booth for 4 years straight before they placed an order. And, you know, they'd walk through, they'd look at everything. They asked thoughtful questions. We had good conversations. There was no like weird, awkward things that happened. It just, they weren't ready. Like they didn't see what they needed to see or whatever it was, you know, it didn't fit with what they were doing. And so I think that follow-up piece and the patience piece, and to your point too, like all the marketing everyone's doing now, like it's all a long game. You know, it's all things that we need to put into play for that long game and building the relationship. I don't know. Nothing's a quick fix. Nothing's like a, you know, golden ticket.
Nothing is. And, you know, I think a lot about the perception of things, right? So like the perception that, you know, you're super big and you're super successful or the perception that, you know, this, if I buy this thing, it's going to be like a hot seller overnight. Or, you know, it's one of those things where I think we're so inundated with things all the time, with visuals, with commentary, with people who claim to be experts. And it's like, well, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt because
what
works for one person is not going to work for anybody else. And everybody's trying to make some money. And it's very easy to get sucked into things that there are people are, I'm going to promise you, you're going to do this. And it's like, but, you know, or, you know, just the whole thing. It took me a long time to get traction in my business, you know? And for me, my personal thought is head down, do the work, slow and steady. And that is what makes a sustainable business. That's what's made a sustainable business for me, you know? And if I went back to my 2017 self, when I was getting on fair and I was doing my first trade shows and I was like super nervous and trying to prove things and like convince people. And now I'm kind of like, I'm at this place where I'm like, you know what? The right people will find my brand if I talk about it, if I put a good foot forward. And so that's been like going back to kind of the store. That's been one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is the store. You know, I'm not going to get rich on the store. I'm not. But I look at it almost more like a marketing piece of my brand because there are a lot of tourists on my strip who are going to come into my shop and they're going to experience my brand. My brand is very colorful. It's joyful. And I think that that's the experience I want people to have when they come into my store. I also want to be very transparent about how we do things. So you can look from my store, you can stand in the store, look over the counter and see our operation. And that leads to really great conversations with people. So I think for me, it's like, you know, I know that this works for me, but that might not work for somebody else. But that's my authenticity. That's my brand. And I think that's something to, as people shift and change in their business and pick up sales channels and maybe open stores or go on fair, it's like, these are things that differentiate yourself, right? So it's like, how do you do that? And I think going back to the whole thing about like a store owner being willing to reach out if they're being excluded, right? For me, a lot of that was about the product and about that story. And so if you can differentiate yourself to where somebody's excited about your brand, like I was excited about the brand and it sold well for me. So I could sell it in my store because I wanted to talk about it and they were cute and they fit in with our overall vibe of the shop. So me losing that brand was a big deal. That was like, I need to reach out. This is important for me to not only because it was selling, but because it was a good compliment to what we had going on here already. So that's a long-winded way to say, you don't know who's listening. You don't know who's looking, but I think it's like, if you can focus and do something that you're really proud about and people will find you and they will open those emails and they will look at your pictures. And even if they don't respond right away, it's going to plant a seed.
They're paying attention. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I love this. And I also have to say that my head was like nodding yes the entire time you were talking about slow growth and just being very intentional in what we're creating and being intentional about how we're talking about our brand and all of these things. I could not agree more with what you said there. So thank you for sharing that with us. As we wrap this up, what's coming up next for you, Genesis? Is there anything you want to share with all of us?
Well, I mean, we're heading into the holiday season. So it's a bit nutty. It'll be my first holiday season with the store. We're going back to in-person events for the holidays, like, which has been, I'm just really stressed about it all. But I feel like, you know, that's always a big thing with wholesale. Now there's the retail component, you know, the online and off, going back to in-person. And then, you know, also with wholesale, you always have to have something new. So we're working on our new collection. for January 2022. Oh my gosh.
I know, right?
That will release then. We have some fun collaborations in the works with other brands. So yeah, there's a lot going on, but
that's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah.
Good. Well, tell people where they can find you online if they want to check out your website or follow you on social.
So we're online at graphicanthology.com and mainly over on Instagram at graphicanthology.
Awesome. Well, Genesis, thank you for this amazing chat. I really enjoyed catching up with you again. And thank you too for sharing, you know, kind of behind the scenes of what you've experienced as both a buyer and a manufacturer selling on Fair. I think there's a lot of nuances there that maybe we all don't realize. And so kind of sharing these types of things can help everyone benefit. So thank you for that.
Of course. I was happy to chat with you, Katie. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Isn't Genesis amazing? She and I ended up chatting for another like 10 or 15 minutes after the episode end because she's just so wonderful. And I could not agree more with everything she said about slow, steady growth and how one person's business is not the same as someone else's. So I really want you to think through what she said and hopefully that resonated with you. Also, let's circle back to this Fair zip code protection situation. You may be alienating or excluding customers without realizing it, without intending to do so, because your zip code protection is turned on. Now, on the surface, zip code protection makes sense. A store needs to continue to place orders with you if they don't want you selling to other stores in their close proximity, right? However, we don't want to make this a bad experience for our buyers. You may have stores that want to reorder from you, but the Fair algorithm and their tech settings are preventing those shops from ordering. You may be losing out on sales. And again, it's not a good customer experience if they need or want more of your product and cannot get it. Now, not all business owners, not all shop owners will reach out directly to you like Genesis did. So all this to say, definitely look into the settings of the different technology pieces that you're using, whether it's Fair or something else, and make sure that those settings are working in a way that you want it to work, that they're benefiting you and also helping you create an easy and streamlined experience for your buyers. All right, friends, that's all we got for you today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to subscribe to the podcast, to Proof to Product, on whatever podcast feed you're listening on. Also, if you could take 1 minute of your time to head to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and write a review, I would greatly appreciate it. These reviews not only help us build our audience and continue to bring you high quality content, but I also love reading them. So I appreciate you doing that. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back soon with a new episode.